animals, talking animals. Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and today on Talking Animals, I'm presenting a special show devoted to greyhounds, and specifically Amendment 13, the ballot measure that, if it passes on November 6th, would end greyhound racing in Florida by 2020. This would represent a significant step in that Florida's home to 11 of the 18 dog racing tracks active in the U.S. For this discussion, I'm joined in studio by Carrie Teal, Executive Director of Grey2K USA Worldwide, a national greyhound protection organization, and Don Goldstein, Talking Animals' longtime greyhound correspondent. Oh, and there's two other in-studio guests. While perhaps contributing less to the conversation, we're also joined here by two retired racing greyhounds, Mira and Jazzy, both now members of the Goldstein family. While the conversation will primarily involve Carrie, Don, and myself, we'll also spend some time incorporating listener phone calls, emails, and texts. Inviting additional voices to participate in the discussion, we're well aware there's a passionate No on 13 contingent, and we do expect to hear from them and welcome their calls, texts, and emails along the way. To that end, let me mention how to join the conversation for everybody interested in participating by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. And I want to note that if you'd like to see as well as hear today's conversation, we're streaming on Facebook Live via my personal page, which is to say, if you're on Facebook at the moment or wander on to Facebook, feel free to head to my page, Duncan Strauss, and see the humans and greyhounds gathered in the studio. Indeed, all that said, let me welcome Carrie Teal and Don Goldstein to Talking Animals. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Good morning, Duncan.
Good morning. Thanks for being here. And again, we should note Carrie traveled from the Boston area, if I'm not mistaken, to be here today. So huge thanks for that. Let's begin by asking how each of you first became acquainted with greyhounds. Carrie, let's start with you.
Well, I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and my mother always had rescue dogs around. She had a real knack for finding dogs that were lost and bringing them in and helping find homes for them. So, you know, we always had just lots of dogs around. And I went to Multnomah Greyhound Park, which was our local dog track, and actually bet on races. But, you know, my mother started to become more aware of different animal welfare issues. And, you know, so I sort of went on that journey with her. And after a few years, we started taking a closer look at Multnomah Greyhound Park, which was one of the oldest dog tracks in the country, and it had a bad history of animal welfare problems. And so it's something that we started to look at and work on, and we started to do some activism around. And I then worked on an animal welfare ballot question on another issue, and ended up doing some work in the state legislature on that issue. And the dog tracks came in at the end of the session and tried to get a multi-million-dollar subsidy, which I fought and defeated. And then the dog tracks came back in the middle of the night and over they flipped four votes and passed the subsidy again. And I was able to get a gubernatorial veto. And so that was my first, you know, my introduction to it was a local dog track in my community, which became activism personally, and then, you know, political activism. And then just to finish that, go to Don's story, which is much more interesting, I then went on to work on a local ballot question in Massachusetts to outlaw greyhound racing. I was the spokesperson for that at the age of 22. We thought we were going to win. We ran a good campaign, but we ended up losing 51-49, which was one of the darkest days of my life. And after that, we formed a national nonprofit to work for these dogs all over the country. So I've essentially spent, you know, the last 20 plus years working on this issue all over the country and all over the world, which has been just an incredible blessing and something that I'm grateful for every single day.
Wow. All right. Well, that's quite a tale and quite a story arc, too. So, Don, how about you? How did you first become acquainted and enamored with greyhounds?
Well, just coincidentally, by the way, I also grew up in Portland, Oregon. And
wow. And something in the water there,
same
apparently.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Same neighborhood in Portland,
really?
As well. Several decades apart,
yeah,
of course.
Okay.
But,
yeah,
still. We did. I was in the Coast Guard for many, many years, over 30 years. And when I was stationed in Washington, D.C., my kids went to Virginia Tech. And my wife and I were visiting them down at Blacksburg, and we happened to see a TV show about retired greyhounds as pets. And we had a mutt that we had rescued 16 years earlier that was on his last legs, and we knew that. And we were already talking about getting another dog to maybe kind of extend his life and extend his will to live. And I just mentioned that I'd always thought about getting a greyhound, again, because of Multnomah Kennel Club. And my wife said, you know, I thought about it too. And we had never talked about it. We've been married for over 20 years at that point. So we looked into it, and in 1992, we adopted our first greyhound when we lived in Northern Virginia. And we just fell madly in love with the breed. And over the ensuing 26 years, we have adopted 10, and we fostered over 50 greyhounds. And my feelings for the breed have only increased.
Let me ask you then what may seem the obvious question at the tail end of that story. To those of us who haven't yet had the pleasure of living with a greyhound, tell me what makes them special. How did you guys fall in love? And that's a sustained love affair, obviously, for 26 years. What is it about greyhounds that stand out?
They're very sweet animals. They're very gentle animals. They have certain personality traits, that being two of them. They all have their own personality quirks. But if you can see the two that are laying on the floor next to me here, the dark brindle, who is Myra, and I've had her for 6 years, we have. And the black girl is Jazzy, and she's 6 years old. We've had her for 4 years. They're just special. They're my best friends. And I've got two more at home, by the way. We have a total of 4 greyhounds in the house.
And at any given moment, how many greyhounds are living at the home?
Anywhere from 4 to 6.
Okay, so 6 is where it taps out.
We usually tap out at 6.
I gotcha. Okay. So let's do a bit of Greyhound Racing 101. Either one of you, I guess, could maybe give me a little bit of history. When did it start, at least in the U.S., and what states and tracks now are active, which I know is sort of two separate questions, but just to kind of give us a quick overview.
Sure. So Greyhound Racing was legalized in Florida in the spring of 1931, the first races occurred on December 1st, 1931. There were movements across many states in the late 20s and early 30s to legalize commercial greyhound racing. There were tracks that would appear, illegal dog tracks that would pop up. Law enforcement would raid them, and then they would shut down and then, you know, reappear somewhere else. And the early dog men, as they called themselves, were essentially farmers that would take greyhounds they had bred and transport them from each of these, you know, from one flapper track to another flapper track. Earl Warren in California cracked down on these illegal races. So there were attempts to legalize greyhound racing for many, many years in a number of states. Actually, in Kentucky, an effort to legalize greyhound racing went to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the greyhound industry lost. Florida, finally in 1931, did legalize greyhound racing. It was the first state to do so. The bill passed the legislature, went to the governor. The governor vetoed it. He later said he had been offered a $100,000 bribe to sign the bill, and he told them that if his signature was worth that much, he'll keep it. He said on his deathbed, which is a great story.
Wow.
The legislature came back, overrode his veto by a single vote. And in December of 1931, you saw dog tracks pop up all over the state. The industry expanded for many years, despite opposition from the faith community. At its peak, which was about 1992, there were more than 70 operational dog tracks in 19 states, about $3.5 billion bet across the country on this. And then since then, due to a number of factors, we've really seen a catastrophic decline. Today the industry is a shambles of what it was. There's now only 17 operational tracks, 11 of those in Florida. across six states, about 400 million perhaps bet nationwide, again, down from 3.5 billion. And that's from all sources, simulcasting live and something called advanced deposit wagering. So the industry is really a shadow of what it was. And, you know, I think that decline has come from a number of factors. The industry was hit really hard by the expansion of other forms of gambling, tribal gambling, slot machines. I think the industry was also really devastated by animal welfare concerns. There was a National Geographic expose about greyhound racing in Florida that aired, I believe in 1991, that really set off a firestorm of controversy around this industry, both in terms of live lure training, which is the use of rabbits and other animals to train these dogs, the mass euthanasia of dogs. At that point, there was virtually no greyhound adoption. I think Don actually was one of the first adopters. You adopted in 1992 the first time?
Yes, 1992.
Not a lot of greyhound adoption happening in 1992.
Yeah.
And all of the concerns that we're still talking about today. And so I think that, you know, that gambling expansion, the humane issues, and also demographic changes have really brought this industry to its knees. And we're hopeful that voters in Florida will say enough is enough. It's time to fully phase out this industry and vote yes on 13.
And let me actually just quickly, for people who might just be tuning in, say this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in, my guests are Carrie Teal, Executive Director of Great 2K USA Worldwide, a greyhound protection organization, and Don Goldstein, Talking Animals, longtime greyhound correspondent. Convened this discussion largely because of Amendment 13, the ballot measure that, if it passes on November 6, would end greyhound racing in Florida by 2020. If you'd like to ask Carrie or Don a question or offer a comment of your own, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. We are streaming this conversation on Facebook Live via my personal page, so again, if you'd like to see us have this discussion, you could just head to Duncan Strauss on Facebook. So one of the things you said there towards the end of recapping, Carrie, that I think it might be important as we move into more specifically Amendment 13 is the complicated, screwy Florida law that as those fortunes diminished and the amount being bet diminished, still effectively required tracks to keep running dogs, even if they didn't want to. And many have, openly for some years, said they don't really care either way, but they were required to. Can you just give us a little outline of that?
Sure. So, you know, from the beginning, the greyhound racing industry was a marriage of track owners who were really interested in gambling only, and the individuals who refer to themselves as the dog men, who essentially are greyhound trainers and breeders. And I mean, two very distinct groups. And I mean, the original track owners were people like Al Capone and Meyer Lansky. So, you know, as the industry changed, when it peaked in 1992 and the industry started to see a decline, the industry tried to diversify, and it came to the Florida legislature and legislatures all over the country and asked for tax breaks, asked for you know, various changes in the law to help them. But the main thing they wanted was the expansion of gambling. They wanted what's called simulcasting, which is the right to have races beamed into their tracks, and people can bet on them. And by the way, most of that is horse racing. So if you look at, take for example, San Fernando Kennel Club in Central Florida, you know, most of their simulcasting gambling today is not on dog racing, it's on horse racing. They essentially are part of the Kentucky Derby. That's mm-hmm. their business model. They also ask for poker rooms in Florida. Every dog track except that same one in Central Florida has an attached poker room. And they fought for, mostly unsuccessfully, the right to have slot machines. Tracks in South Florida did gain the right to have slot machines through a constitutional amendment, but the other tracks have been desperately trying to get slot machines for years. So when these other types of gambling came in, the tracks made a deal with the devil. They said to the greyhound breeders, look, we're not really trying to get rid of you. We're going to protect greyhound racing. And so when we have simulcasting brought in, the law is written in a way that in order to have simulcasting on horse racing, you must continue to race dogs. And similarly, when they were given the right to have poker rooms, the law said they must, by law, continue to race dogs. In fact, the law says that they must hold the number of races they held the year before they got their card room, or at least 90% thereof. And so you essentially have these dog tracks that are frozen in 1996, and having to run the number of races they ran in 1996 to have their poker room. And, you know, they've become poker rooms that happen to have dogs running around circles with no one betting on the dogs. And it's this bizarre state dog racing mandate that never made sense, that was always a bad idea. And, you know, in the legislature, we've had really bipartisan support because, you know, progressive lawmakers look at this as an animal welfare issue and say, this is not who we are. This goes against our values. This is cruel and inhumane. And conservative lawmakers look at this and say, why should these private businesses be required to do something they don't want to do? It would be like, Henry Ford in the 20s, being required to subsidize horse and buggy manufacturers. I mean, it just makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, but that's what happened.
Right, and that's what the law up until really technically as we speak.
Yes.
That so really then the tracks are running the dogs because in most cases the card rooms are super lucrative. So it's like, this is what we have to do over here to get what we really want over here.
These young dogs are dying on Florida tracks for nothing, for an industry that's no longer economically viable, for tracks that are losing money. Collectively, the Florida tracks are losing about $35 million a year on greyhound racing, all because of a state mandate that says they have to do it. The state is losing money on greyhound racing, the tracks are losing money on greyhound racing, and the dogs are losing their lives. It's a loser for everyone. The only ones that are benefiting are the greyhound trainers and greyhound breeders, for whom the state mandate has essentially become a state subsidy of their activities.
Right. So I'm going to guess that is the core group that comprises the no on 13.
Amendment 13 has virtually no opposition outside of these greyhound breeders and trainers who want to continue to operate this cruel business. I mean, there's a little bit. I mean, we've seen a few fringe groups come in essentially as front groups, in my opinion, for the greyhound breeders. But the opposition is really only the greyhound breeders and trainers.
Okay, so we'll come back to that because certainly at least since I've announced that we're doing this show, there's been a lot of interesting social media posts, some of which appear at least to be by adoption groups who also stand against 13. So we'll circle back to that, but let's put one of our callers into the conversation as well. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Kerry Teal and Don Goldstein.
Yes, sir. How are you, Duncan?
Good.
I want first thing to say, I just want to say I am an animal lover, and I love dogs, cats, and everything else. But one thing he's not mentioning is the reason Florida doesn't have a state income tax is pari-mutuel wagering offset that, of which dog racing was a big factor in that. And what? I don't know if they can do anything to protect the dogs without eventually having us to pay a state income tax. I'm all for it, you know. And I just want to let them, they're not mentioning that. But if they research the history of the state, that's why we don't have state income tax. It's high life horse racing and dog racing.
Okay, unfortunately, you're unless the phone gets a lot less crackly, I'd like to keep you on in case there's any follow-up questions, but it's super crackly, which is, I think, hard for people to listen to.
But I apologize. I'm on the road.
That's fine. I figured I just was letting you know in case I did have to let the call go. That's the only reason why. But I'm just going to say, and we'll, of course, offer Kerry and Don the chance to respond, but I thought a state income tax there was a constitutional limit against that, and that you'd have to take tremendous steps, no matter what your interests were, to even think about adding a state tax.
I mean, maybe.
I hope that's true. I'm not an expert on it, but I do remember hearing why we don't have a state income tax, and it was primarily pari-mutuel wagering.
You know,
okay, you know what? I'm sorry. I am going to let the call go, but we're going to further discuss your question.
Sure.
Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome, Dr. Thanks.
I've never heard of that. That's strange. Maybe that was a reason given in 1931. It's obviously not relevant today. I mean, according to state records, the state is generating, very little virtually no tax revenue from greyhound racing today. In fact, there was a report done by the legislature a few years ago, which indicated that regulatory costs exceed revenues and the state's taking a loss of between $1 million and $3.3 million annually in greyhound racing. So if that was a rationale, it was a rationale decades and decades and decades ago. That's a puzzling one, Don.
I have not heard that one either. And since 1990, the state's revenue from greyhound racing has gone down by 98%.
I thought I'd heard it all, Don.
All right. We're going to get to another caller in a moment. Let me get caught up on a couple of either text or emails that have come in. One says simply, this is the first one that came in a bit ago. It says, why is the dog racing amendment partnered with vaping?
It is not.
Yeah, that's right.
Amendment 13 is a standalone amendment. Vaping is in fact, tied to offshore drilling.
Okay, so that's just a misreading, I think, of your ballot information or your amendment information. So then another email here says, I don't understand the confusion with people thinking this bill will affect hunting, fishing, agility, and charity racing, like wiener dog races. Can you all elaborate on these things people have been misled on and why they can't be affected by Amendment 13 passing?
So, to be clear, the argument for Amendment 13 is that greyhound racing is cruel and inhumane. We know that thousands of greyhounds in this industry endure lives of confinement. They're kept in warehouse-style kennels and rows of stacked metal cages. We know the greyhounds are dying on these tracks regularly. In Florida, according to state records, a racing greyhound dies on a track every 3 days. They're dying from broken legs, broken backs, paralysis.
Electrocution.
Dogs are electrocuted. Thank you, Don. You took the word right out of my mouth. So that is the argument. And Amendment 13 phases out commercial greyhound racing and does absolutely nothing else. In fact, you know, this amendment went before the Florida Supreme Court, and the Florida Supreme Court was crystal clear. It said, and this is a direct quote, if Amendment 13 is adopted, therefore, the only activities which will change in a material way are dog racing in Florida and the wagering thereon, which will cease, period. That's what the Florida Supreme Court said. Not a liberal Supreme Court, a Supreme Court with a lot of conservative judges. Now, a funny thing has happened, Duncan, in the past couple of weeks. The greyhound breeders are losing this debate. They know that Florida voters are about to vote yes to phase out greyhound racing. And so they have stopped debating the issue. And instead, they have begun a campaign of misinformation and subterfuge in which they're trying to make Amendment 13 about something else. And they have a number of just very strange conspiracy theories. One of the conspiracy theories is that Amendment 13 bans hunting and fishing. In fact, they have a digital ad that I think is going to be removed from Facebook very soon. They have a digital ad that says, Amendment 13 bans many types of sport fishing. That's a direct quote. This is completely and totally made up. And, you know, I don't, just setting aside the issue, I mean, these people should be ashamed of themselves. How can you get up in the morning and just bald-faced lie about an amendment? Another conspiracy theory is that this is the largest expansion of gambling in Florida history. That's another digital ad that they're trying to spread. The Supreme Court debunked that too. The Supreme Court said, quote, Amendment 13 will not directly affect other forms of gaming. If approved, Amendment 13 would not authorize the creation of new slot machine operations in Broward and Miami-Dade counties or anywhere else. Quote, unquote. They're saying that this will ban flyball and other dog sports. Don, did the Supreme Court debunk that too?
Yes, they certainly did. It only involves gaming, greyhound racing in conjunction with wagering at pari-mutuel betting facilities. So unless people are doing fly ball at Derby Lanes, it doesn't affect it.
Yeah, the language compared to certainly a lot of other amendments is not only it's lean, it's very like short, concise. I mean, as these things go, certainly. But here's something I want to ask them. We're going to get some more callers involved. Is there any polling that has been done on how Amendment 13 is faring? Because part of the premise of what you said a few minutes ago is that as those groups started to see that they were going to lose and that Amendment 13 was likely to pass, are there so many hard numbers you could point to that document that?
So we did extensive polling some months ago at the outset of this campaign, and the findings were fascinating. You know, it's a low information issue. So it's, you know, a lot of voters don't have a frame of reference for it. And so the undecided rate, if you will, at the outset is incredibly high. But when you start getting into the issues and you talk to voters about the arguments made by both the yes side and the no side, it becomes clear that voters are deeply sympathetic to the animal welfare arguments. They're deeply moved by confinement, deaths, injuries, the drug problem, which we haven't even talked about, which is a very, very significant problem with, you know, 73 dogs of, there have been 73 gram cocaine positives in recent years. And voters are not at all moved by opposition arguments. When you ask voters about job loss, a small minority are moved by that issue, and the vast majority are not, for example. And so, you know, I believe we're approaching 60 now. 60% is a high threshold.
Okay. And that's no less than that's what's required.
That's correct.
On election day,
that's
right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And so I you know, we've run a good campaign. But what I believe has happened is I believe that the National Greyhound Association, which is a lobby group based in Abilene, Kansas, over the past few weeks went out and did their own polling, and they found the same things that we found, which is that voters care about our arguments and don't care about their arguments, yeah. And that if there's a full, honest debate about this issue, it ends at 70-30, and that is why they have chosen to stop having an actual debate and instead try and lie to voters and make this campaign about a bunch of other things. So I you know, as a political strategy, I get it, but I don't understand how people can get up in the morning and look at themselves in the mirror and say, boy, I'm a part of that campaign that's lying to voters and saying that this bans many types of sport fishing.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
There's a couple things I want to come back to, but I want to get some more callers involved. But one thing, when you talked about some of the other activities that supposedly this was going to impact, I am curious to come back to in a moment after we take at least one of our callers and talk about the NRA's apparent involvement in this, because that seems interesting and puzzling in almost equal measure. But anyway, let me, yeah. Some of these people have been waiting for quite some time, so let me get them involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Carrie Teal and Don Goldstein.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Hey, I'd just like to make a point that those who are on the animal cruelty bandwagon, they should really think of how it's somewhat hypocritical as they sit down to eat a pork chop for dinner tonight, because the pork industry is well noted for being so much more cruel, and it's been shown that pigs actually have an intelligence close, and some claim greater than dogs. So I don't know how they really can, justify using an animal cruelty issue unless they're a vegetarian. And I mean, I know that the majority are most likely not. I myself have been to dog races at Derby Lanes for many years, and occasionally enjoy going down there and betting on a dog race. I've always seen those dogs. I know dogs and animals. The dogs are kept in cage, so there is a certain amount of cruelty, but when the trainers train them, they train those dogs not with a whip, but with love and reward. So at least during their life, they are receiving some love and something. They do love to run, and so they're doing something that they love. So that's the point that I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you so much for your call, Carrie, you know, and or Don. Any response to that? We have more callers, and I have my own questions I want to get to as well.
The problem I have with that argument is it can be used to justify anything, right? I mean, you can, you know, no matter what issue you're looking at, no matter what problem you're trying to solve, you can always point to something else and say, well, what about, you know, child labor in Bangladesh? I mean, it's just it's not relevant. It's a distraction. It's an attempt to make to ask voters to look elsewhere. And, you know, the caller said, quote, there's a certain amount of cruelty. I think that's the question. I think what we're going to ask voters is really quite simple. We know that these dogs are enduring lives of confinement. We know that dogs are dying on the track. We know there have been 400 plus greyhound drug positives, including 73 cocaine positives. We know that You know, this is according to the caller, quote, there's a certain amount of cruelty, quote unquote, to man's best friend. And we're going to ask voters, would you treat your dog this way? Would you keep your dog in a stacked metal cage for 20 to 23 hours a day with carpet remnants or shred paper as bedding? I wouldn't. I have rescued Greyhound. She's amazing. She lights up my life. And I would never treat my dog that way. And I don't think most Floridians would either.
Okay, let's take one of these other callers has been holding quite some time, so let's get them involved, and then we'll get back to some of my questions. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Carrie Teal and Don Goldstein. Hello, it's you.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. It's you, please.
Okay, I have a question. I understand that when, if this passes, that there's a lot of planning to relocate these dogs wherever they're going to be relocated, whether they're going to be at shelters or the Greyhound groups are going to be able to take all of them. What I'm concerned about is not the ones that are at the track that have to be relocated. I'm concerned about the farms where there is puppies. And at the farms, there are no regulation. And you have puppies that are kept there until they're 12 weeks old and some longer. What happens to them? How are their lives saved?
Okay, thank you. We'll get Carrie and or Don to respond. Thank you for your call.
One of the things that's important to note about this amendment is that it phases out Greyhound. This does not happen immediately. It's actually a 26-month phase-out period. 95% of Greyhounds are done by the time they're two or two and a half anyway. So if you think about it, when this amendment passes on November 6th, all of the dogs that are in the pipeline would have had to be rehomed by the time Greyhound racing is phased out at the end of 2020. It doesn't add anything to it. We have Greyhound rescue groups all over the country, numbering close to 300, that are clamoring for these dogs. It will be taken care of.
And, you know, let me also, I mean, there are some, you know, over the last 5 years, the industry has blacklisted, and Don can talk about this, you know, any adoption groups that speak out about these problems. And what is left is the industry is now only giving dogs to adoption groups that will defend it. And I know that some of your listeners are in adoption groups who have taken the no position, and which I is unfortunate and I think is bizarre. And the question I would ask them to think about is, what is better? The dogs are in the system now, both at the track and on the farms. All of those dogs are going to have short racing careers. And in fact, the dogs at tracks are going to leave this industry before that 26-month period is up, whether or not Amendment 13 passes. What is better, to have massive public interest in adopting those dogs or not? Because that's what's happened in other states, is when dog racing has ended, there has been overwhelming public interest, unprecedented public interest. And we've seen record years of Greyhound adoption. We saw it in Massachusetts. We saw it in New Hampshire. So, you know, the dogs are more at risk. The dogs in the system now are more at risk if Amendment 13 fails. Amendment 13 is an opportunity to help thousands of dogs find homes. I think voters are going to pass Amendment 13. I think they're going to vote yes, and I think these dogs are going to get the second chance they deserve.
The rescue group that I'm a member of, which is Greyhound Rescue and Adoptions of Tampa Bay, we have been blackballed. We can no longer get dogs from the industry because we have taken a hard line that we think this is time to end this cruel and humane industry.
And let me follow that up. First of all, let me just folks know that might, again, just only be tuning in now. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guests are Carrie Thiel, Executive Director of Great 2K USA World Wild, a Greyhound Protection Organization, and Don Goldstein, our longtime Greyhound correspondent. We are discussing chiefly Amendment 13 and issues that kind of swirl around that, the ballot measure that, if it passes on November 6th, would end Greyhound racing in Florida by 2020. We're well aware there are those listening who have different views, and we've been welcoming calls and emails and texts, and we still are. The calls can be directed to 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. We also have two retired racing Greyhounds in studio with us, Mira and Jazzy. And by the way, we are streaming this conversation on Facebook Live, via my personal Facebook page. So if you'd like to see the conversation as well as hear it, and see Amir and Jazzy as well, you can head to Duncan Strauss on Facebook. So let me ask something to follow up what you just said, Don. A sensitive subject, no doubt, but that's the sort of the arrangements that exist between tracks and Greyhound rescue groups. I realize that much of this has historically been unspoken, in that the rescue groups would steer clear of criticizing dog racing or their nearby tracks or other tracks or any other negative comments about dogs' treatment, housing, food, etc. And in exchange for that kind of cooperation, the groups would get the dogs to be able to adopt out. And I don't know, and this I'm just guessing based on how vehement some people are, is there any money that is also part of that arrangement, that, or can people even address this, you guys?
Yeah, we can address that. Okay. Some groups do receive money from the industry along with the dogs. Our particular group, for the most part, never did. We got the dogs, but we did not get any financial support from the industry. Many of the groups do. But along with that comes the agreement that they won't speak against the industry.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the adoption community has been co-opted by the industry and has been politicized. And they started this about 5 years ago, actually. It started in Iowa. There was a bill in Iowa to end the state dog racing mandate in that state. It passed. But during the debate, the industry made a concerted attempt to start to remove any adoption groups like Don's that speak out about problems. It's not just his group. The vice chair of our campaign, Sonia Stradiman, was the track sponsored adoption group at Palm Beach Kennel Club, the preeminent dog track in the world until a year ago, and was removed when she started to talk about all the broken legs that she has taken and dogs that she has helped. So they blacklisted any adoption groups. They told the adoption groups a lot of things that are not true. And they've turned the adoption community into an extension of the industry. That doesn't take anything away from the good work these adoption groups are doing, obviously. Sure. I mean, I'm grateful for their work every single day, but that's a fact.
Right.
So when the industry is hoping that will save them, I don't think it will. I think voters are capable of looking at this issue and making a good decision. And like I said, I think they're going to vote yes.
I just think it's interesting because, again, in social media, when I first posted about the show, there's been a gigantic amount of Facebook action, a lot of it from adoption groups and others who are clearly No on 13 types, and more of the same kind of stuff on Twitter. And even now, again, we are streaming on Facebook Live, and it looks like there's quite an exchange about that again, seems to be kind of corresponding to what we're saying, that some of these groups, because there are at least some that I believe are adoption groups that think there's all kinds of problems with phasing out dog racing, and problems probably are at home, manner of speaking. But let me get some more callers involved. I just want to make sure we have plenty of time to hear some other voices as well. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Carrie Teal and Don Goldstein.
Yeah, man, thanks for this great topic. First of all, the many of the groups and individuals who are No on 13 are what I would call animal slavery advocates. What are the main groups opposing you? Is a group that includes people who also prevented a law in New York that would stop allowing people to run horses on the streets as beasts of burden. All the people who look at dogs and horses and every other animal this way, that all they are is little beasts of burden for us to do whatever we want with them. Let's run them. Let's race them. Let's put them in hoops. Let's have them jump through hoops of fire in circuses. Let's have them as helpers. They all look at animals as if they're our slaves, and they're not. And your group is doing the right thing. I wish your amendment went further and said, let's just ban all this racing, whether it's wagered on or not. But there's an organized political lobby, including the NRA, the type of people who believe animals are beasts of burden or just something to be shot and killed.
No, I will say that I think campaigns reveal the character of the people running them. And we have seen in the No campaign, I mean, Jack Corey, the chief lobbyist for the Greyhound industry, 10 days ago at a debate in Miami, stood on a stage a few feet from our vice chair in front of hundreds of people and repeatedly referred to the death of her 17-year-old son. That is the single most despicable thing I have seen in my adult life in politics. The Greyhound industry welcomed an accused animal abuser and likely dog fighter named Jesse James Hodges, which became a scandal a few months ago. That is the campaign they're running. They're running a campaign where they're no longer debating the issue, and they're trying to tell voters this is about a bunch of other stuff. Meanwhile, you know, our campaign is like the last bipartisan issue. I mean, we're Amendment 13 is supported by Mike Huckabee and the Miami Herald. what other issue unites Mike Huckabee and the Miami Herald? And Andrew Gillum and Laura Trump.
Yeah.
The Florida College
Democrats. That's a rare intersection.
The Florida College Democrats and Pam Bondi.
Yeah.
You know, 100 local veterinarians. You know, we've won virtually every major newspaper endorsement, the Miami Herald, the Orlando Sentinel, the Palm Beach Post, including, by the way, a lot of newspapers that have dog tracks. I said earlier the Palm Beach Kennel Club is the preeminent dog track in the world. The Palm Beach Post, their home newspaper, endorsed Amendment 13. So, you know, this is a widespread bipartisan campaign that has vast support, and which is why I'm so confident and so optimistic that come Election Day, it's going to be a good day for the dogs and Florida is going to vote yes on 13.
And here's just something super, just basic logistics. It is Amendment 13, as I think we've covered adequately, which means it's 13th spot on the ballot. Not that anybody can do anything about it, but is there some concern that just with voter fatigue and again, not enough voters even go out, although this time around for midterms, I think they will for a number of other reasons. But is there some concern about, will they get through to 13?
You know, I would urge voters to consider 13 as last on the ballot, but first in your heart.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take another call.
And it is also by far the shortest of the amendments.
Right.
You know, the ballot title is three words. The ballot summary is two sentences.
Yeah. No, it's very straightforward. And yeah, that's true. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Kerry Teal and Don Goldstein.
Hi. I'm a volunteer working on Yes for 13. And I just want to point out that the industry is just inherently cruel, and that's something we don't hear much about. Besides the dogs dying on the track, I mean, anytime it becomes about money, you know, you breed them. If they're not fast enough, they're byproducts. You don't need them. It's all about money. It's not about the dogs. And I wanted to just tell people that, you know, some of this misinformation is out there. I've been leafleting a lot, and a lot of people are, or not a lot, but some of the people are making these talking points against it. And the more you talk to them, it's all about educating. You can turn their minds around, and I just really want to encourage people not only to get out to vote, but to get 5 or 10 friends to get out and vote for it, too, because, you know, there's so many amendments, and people are confused, and this is the simplest and easiest ones, and it's just about cruelty. All this other stuff is just, you know, they're just putting it in there to confuse everybody. And the more you talk to people, there's very few people that are against it once you can get the opportunity to educate them. So we just need people to get out there. And I'll give the website, but I'm sure Kerry will do that. I'll leave that to him. But, you know, the people can still volunteer, get out there, and, you know, try and counter some of this misinformation that's out there, because it's, you know, it's really a problem. You know, all we have to do is educate people, because people don't want to support this cruelty. They really don't. And once they know about it, you know, they're going to vote yes on 13.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. Hey, on a related note, aren't there 40, maybe more, but 40 states that have done away with and or directly outlawed greyhound racing, which should send some sort of message just by itself?
Well, greyhound racing is illegal, and commercial greyhound racing is illegal in 40 states. A lot of those states, it was always illegal. It was never legalized.
Okay.
So there was an initial fight, of course, to legalize commercial greyhound racing. They were successful in 19 states, and it's since been drawn back to now we have active greyhound racing in 6 states, and greyhound racing is illegal in 40 states. But you know, this is a true grassroots campaign. We have 800 volunteers statewide, and you know, these are incredibly gentle, sweet dogs. So I would ask all of your listeners not just to vote yes, but to ask your friends to vote yes, to engage in the campaign. Go to our website at protectdogs.org. If you'd like a lawn sign, if you can donate or help in any way, please do so. It's not just about helping these dogs. It's about who we are. It's about our values and about, I mean, this really does reflect on our character. And I think we need to send a message. I think Florida voters need to send a message that regardless of what the issue is, if you're going to run a campaign that is this misleading, where you don't even, their digital ads don't use the word greyhound or dog or racing. They say ban many types of sport fishing. if that doesn't offend every single voter in Florida, if that doesn't drive you to the polls and urge you to vote yes, just to send them a message, this is the worst in modern politics. And we have to draw a line. So I would encourage everyone to engage and help us bring this home, because we have a really good chance, but 60% is a tough threshold. I think there's plenty of scenarios in which we end at 59, 58, 57 and lose just because not enough people knew about this issue.
Wow. That's a distressing thought, but let me read an email that came in, I think, in the wake of our reference to the NRA. It just says simply, is that some kind of a psychosis? What the hell does the NRA have to do with dog racing? So I don't think anything much more needs to be said there. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Don Goldstein and Carrie Teal.
Is that me?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I just want to say that the greyhound dogs are muzzled like 23 hours a day, and they don't get out of their cage except for about an hour a day. And I'm saying that this is one of the cruelest sports there is out there. These dogs have no freedom, and they definitely need to be freed from the abuse that they experience every day. So I'm voting yes. I'm 13.
Okay, thank you for your viewpoint. I appreciate the call.
We appreciate that. I will say that if they're not supposed to be muzzled while they're in their kennels. Sometimes they are. We have some pictures from the state records. But for the most part, they're not muzzled in their kennels. But they are in those kennels 20 to 23 hours a day.
Okay, so again, we're in our final couple, 3 minutes probably here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Again, I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Don Goldstein, our longtime Greyhound correspondent, and Carrie Teal of Grade 2K USA, Greyhound Protection Organization. We are discussing Amendment 13, the ballot measure that, again, if it passes on November 6th and needs a 60% rate to pass, would end greyhound racing in Florida over some time by 2020. And so as our last moment or two, if you did want to state your view at 813-239-9663, email dj@wmf.org or text 813-433-0885. And again, we are streaming this discussion on Facebook Live via my personal page. Just go to Duncan Strauss on Facebook if you want to see the final moments of our exchange. So let's put another caller into the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Don Goldstein and Carrie Teal.
Is that me?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to say that I'm actually a no on 13. I know all about the Gray 2K and the Protect Dogs Committee, and I know how they got money from the Humane Society. But you talk about how being insulted is being insulted, knowing the Humane Society, gave money took money from the Eagles and wants Michael Vick to own dogs again, So I think it's laughable when there's a huge group calling themselves grassroots and they're getting millions of dollars donated to them, and they're actually saying things like dogs are in cages 23 hours when I've seen them in the kennels, and I know their first turnouts at 4:30 in the morning, and I know that they're let out for 90 minutes at a time.
How many daily turnouts did you see?
I've heard a million times over and over again.
Right.
My concern is they can say that they have a plan and that they've never received money from the track, but has Grade 2K ever given money to those adoption groups?
Yes.
Because I'm pretty sure that they haven't.
Yes, we have.
If you look at her money, you will not see anything on there.
So,
that's ma'am, I just want to make sure you're hearing Carrie's response to your questions that they are getting through.
Yeah, so that's... Grade 2K USA is not an adoption group, but we do promote adoption. We make donations to adoption groups all over the country and all over the world. We've done that for many, many years. Including financial support. We were the number one funder of greyhound adoption groups when greyhound racing ended in Arizona. And if the attack is that the Yes on 13 campaign is supported by the Humane Society of the United States, I find that a bizarre attack, because along with the ASPCA, the Humane Society of the United States is the largest.
Because I've seen you talk before, and just so you know.
Okay, we have just about 15 more seconds, so and then we have to wrap up the show.
Winning here. This is our first conversation ever together, Right. And I just like you to know that that 0.02% in the state of Florida that Humane Society gives, that is a very welcome non-lapse.
Are you ashamed of the campaign the No campaign is running?
Why would I be ashamed of
forms of sport fishing are banned by Amendment 13?
I'm saying when it says the humane treatment of animal, that could affect what goes on my dinner plate. And yes, when it just says the humane treatment of animal and you don't put it in the ballot,
Okay. Well, I'm so sorry. We are out of time, but I appreciate your comments and wish we could have more time to hear more of them. Thank you so much for your call. So we have just about reached the end of our time here discussing Amendment 13 with Carrie Teal and Don Goldstein. The website for Great 2K is great2kusa.org, and the techdogs.org is the other website that we need to let people know about. Otherwise, I think we have just about reached the end of our time here on Talking Animals Today. Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori and Radioactivity. Others following suit next week on Talking Animals. My guest will be Jason Colby, a historian, professor, and author of Orca, How We Came to Know and Love the Ocean's Greatest Predator. Fascinating examination of the recent history of killer whales, including the first folks to capture, swim, and perform with them. I invite you to join me for that show. Also invite you to check out TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. Links to the Facebook page, Twitter feed, and more. Thanks so much for listening. For all those who participated, this is Talking Animals on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Speaking next Wednesday on 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.